everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. This is the companion podcast to our video show, GardenFork.tv. We talk about do-it-yourself, maker, how-to stuff mixed in with cooking and gardening, beekeeping, and life in general. So welcome. Thanks for downloading the show. If this is your first time here, it's usually me, Eric, with some different guests. Today we have a very special guest. We have the camera operator, who you've never seen in the videos, but she runs the camera a lot of the time. And I also happen to be married to her, and she has a lot of what people really like. She asks the questions that everyone's thinking when I'm trying to explain something.
Or I make fun of him, or I interrupt him.
Like this.
He doesn't like that.
Right, like you just did. So welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for having me. Yes, thanks for having me. Today I'll be the microphone operator.
So we have a whole list of stuff we wanted to talk about, and it's the new year. It's 2016. It's New Year's Day in the morning.
It is.
We have a couple projects to do today. We're going to make a suet cake ring bird feeder thing that we saw on Audubon.org, the Audubon site.
We borrowed a bundt pan for that from our friend.
Yeah.
But we didn't tell him what we were going to use it for. We just said we're going to make a seed cake. I don't think he's going to be too happy with
it. He's not. He's going to go and buy himself a new bundt pan and let us keep this one.
This is a tried and true method.
Yeah. So, what's first on our list here?
First on our list, well, it is New Year's Day. So, you know what that means? That means everybody is either talking about a rehash of 2015 or looking forward and making resolutions for 2016. So I don't think we're going to dwell on the resolutions too much, but one of the things I wanted to say is that I've always found the resolutions really don't work. If you call them resolutions, but if something's pretty intrinsic and you want to get something done yourself, you just call it a goal. You can start it on any day of the year. And I did hear, I thought this was interesting, that if you write your goals down, you are 49% more likely to achieve your goal. So, you know, you hear this all the time, that writing it down, like, throws it to the world, or, you know, it's a reminder for you every day to go back and look at your goals. And that's important. But I never actually heard any data to back that up. So I thought 49% was a pretty strong fact to tie to that. So start writing your goals.
I think that's really important, because it's more like a to-do list then rather than a resolution. The resolutions, I think, kind of after January, after the second week of January, they kind of go away.
Kind of the second day.
Yeah. On the gist, they were just talking about resolutions.
What's the gist?
It's a podcast.
Oh, a podcast.
And there are different types of people. And I learned that I'm the kind of person that will accomplish goals that are set outside me, but my own goals, I do not accomplish them a lot. So if someone comes to me with a deadline, I will make that deadline. But when I set deadlines for myself, I don't. It's hard for me to follow through on them.
So I think I'm the opposite. If it doesn't come internally, intrinsically, well, actually that's not true, because I get my boss's deadlines done too. But
yeah.
But for my own stuff, if I have the need to do it, then I'll get it done, whether I write it down or not. Like, for me, the writing down tends to be a little less important, but I know that that's not the majority of people.
Yeah, what they suggested on the gist was that I should join a mastermind group or a Facebook group where I have to account, I state my goals and I have to account to others for them, or my deadlines.
So you won't be shamed.
Well, right. So I have to make them. So that's my struggle with the video show, is I have so many ideas, and then I get overwhelmed with them, and then I realize I need to just focus on one.
Then he puts his head down.
And then I'm like, I am overwhelmed. But today we're going to do our bird feeder cake, and I'm going to install deadbolts in the doors, and I'm going to make a video about putting the deadbolts, how to put a deadbolt in a door.
I think you're overextending yourself for one day.
I can do those two things.
Okay.
I want to do more, actually, but I thought I'll just do two, and I'll be all right. So one of the things that we as a couple have that go back and forth is that the camera operator sometimes wants stuff done around the house and wants to hire someone to do it. And I always say, I can do that. we're not hiring anyone to do that.
He can do that.
But last May, I ruptured a disc in my back, and it's been a very slow recovery. And then I realized that
I could do a whole show about that.
So we actually hired out some projects in the house. And then in hindsight, I realized it was probably a good thing that we did that.
It's a very good thing.
We have a linoleum floor in the upstate house. It's a 1950s linoleum. And it's a beautiful pattern, but it has what I would call alligatoring or crackalure.
Crackalure?
Yeah, that's a finish, actually. That's a kind of...
Like people do that on purpose?
It's a painting finish, actually.
Oh, like from the 80s?
Maybe. But suffice to say, it was very deteriorating, and the camera operator wanted a new floor. So we researched different linoleums, and we went with a high-end linoleum that is sectional and snaps together. And I was a little suspect of this. But the floor installer guy came, and I wanted to put down sheet linoleum. And he said, if you do that, the seams will crack because the house goes hot and cold, hot and cold.
And ours really does.
Because we let the house go down to 40, 45 degrees when we're not here. And then we heat it up on the weekend, so that would cause this expansion and contraction of the linoleum. So he suggested a floating floor. I mean, it's generically in the trades, it's called like a pergo floor. It's the kind that snaps together, but it's a brand called Marmoleum, which is a high-end brand.
I think it's good for the environment too. You know, as far as floors go.
Yep. And so this gentleman came and measured out the floor, and then his two floor installers came, who are the nicest people in the world. They're just like regular contractors that I run into every day. And they did it in a half a day, and I'm so glad, because I was like, this would have taken me 3 days, and I would have hurt myself.
And what would it have looked like?
It would have looked fine.
Okay. But, you know, you can't... So it has this, like, sort of checkered pattern. Oh, tessellated. That's what you call that. That's the official word.
Oh, really?
Tessellated, yes. So... but you can't tell about the, even if you look really close, you can't tell that they're snapped together. You can't tell.
No, it's a really high quality. It's very well done. Marmoleum is the brand, not inexpensive, but, it will last. The only thing we have to watch is you can't let water puddle on it for an extended length of time.
We have Labradors.
Right. So when they, like yesterday they kicked over the water bowl. So I just had to wipe it up promptly rather than letting it sitting there and evaporate.
Evaporate.
And then down in New York, the camera operator wanted some wallpaper. I call it highlight wallpaper.
You're making me sound like really like a girly girl. I'm not. I put this stuff off for years. It was just we had to get some
home improvements done.
Some pretty home improvements done. So I got
something that didn't involve a palette.
So I got some, actually a little bit of, for those in the know, William Morris wallpaper. So, but we just put it in a very isolated spot, so it's not a whole room. It's just sort of like one.
It's where the fireplace risers are in a row house, if anyone's familiar with that.
No one is.
I think some people know that.
Okay. So anyway, it's just basically a strip.
Well, it's about 6 feet wide, and it goes from floor to ceiling.
Yeah, and our ceilings are high. So it's pretty. Yeah. It's like, I think it's called perhaps an accent wall.
Yes. And I'm really glad I didn't do that. So we actually hired a friend of mine who is very good at wallpaper.
And I'm even happier that you didn't do that.
A lot of measuring. It's a 120-year-old house, building. Nothing is square or level in it. So how do you determine the straight line? You know, for the wall, because the wallpaper has a pattern to it. And if you put it in a little off, it looks off. And so Tony came and did it. And he actually drew giant rectangles on the wall and laid the wallpaper into those rectangles. It was very interesting.
He did a really good job.
Yeah. And it took a whole day to do the two pieces, the two accent walls. But boy, it looks good.
It does look
good. And I didn't have to do it.
And you, do you like it?
It's nice.
I wanted him to say that publicly.
I always look at wallpaper as something I have to take back off the wall. Because when I walk into a job and someone wants a wall painted and there's wallpaper on it, I have to take the wallpaper off. And boy, is that, if Some wallpaper does not like to come off. Sometimes you literally can peel it off.
You know, they have this really new kind of, on Etsy or other places, you can get this kind of like faux wallpaper where you just put it on and it's kind of like vinyl stuff and you just pull it right back off.
Oh.
It's easy peasy.
All right.
We didn't get that.
Oh, darn.
I got the real deal.
Next on our list is actually kind of a local thing, but our general store in our town here reopened last December, and so we went to their one-year anniversary party.
On 12, 13, 14, they opened.
Yeah. And it's just testament to maybe your town has a store that closed. It's really hard to run a retail food establishment in a small town. And three different people tried to reopen that store and failed. And then the fourth one came in and had a couple things going for her and her sister, basically, an extended family. They had worked in the food business all their lives. Their parents ran a restaurant.
So they had experience, number one.
They had a retail customer experience in food. And then a nonprofit group in town bought the building. And Jody, who runs the store, rents the store at a very reasonable rate from them.
So it wasn't an unreasonable investment on her part.
Right. And that might be a model for future general stores in small towns, is that some of the wealthier people in our town got together and pooled their money. They formed a nonprofit and they bought the building and they're continuing to do upgrades to the building. And then they did a request for proposals. And I think like 10 people submitted proposals to run the establishment as a, you know, food slash general store.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a deli that sells essentials like milk and eggs and toilet paper and pasta. You know, that's all I need.
Okay.
But it's become once again the center of town where you can sit there for 20 minutes and see probably three people that you know.
And maybe 12 that you don't. Oh, I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
You know everybody.
But it's just kind of a neat, so if you're, you know, if you have a town store that closed, maybe you could do a Kickstarter campaign or an Indiegogo campaign to raise funds. And you could do that outside your area. And there are probably people in California that would like to reopen a store in Iowa. And like, yeah, I'll give you $50, you know, to help your town. I think it's possible.
Also, people who are, the way where our store is located, a lot of people ride their bikes through our town on their way to other places. So it's not a destination point in and of itself, but you kind of go by it and it's part of the journey. And I think people admire that part of the town just because they're going through and they have a place to stop and they can get, you know, an ice cream or some water or something. And then they remember it because it's a cool building and it's kind of... you know, and there's a good feeling about it and there's a good vibe. But I think what we learn mostly is that it's about the personality of the people who are inside the store running it, and just friendliness counts more than anything.
It's amazing. As soon as you walk in the door, to almost every person, they'll say, hi, I'll be with you in a minute.
Sounds so easy.
Yeah. And they're busy and they're making a sandwich with someone. Hi, I'll be with you in just a minute. And the people, they're like, oh, I've been recognized. Look around the store. You know, I'll be with you. You know, it's just kind of amazing.
It's kind of like customer service 101, but it feels more genuine.
Yeah.
Because they're not like reading from the mantra of the larger organization. It's just kind of, oh, they just said hi because they want to say hi.
Right. Like at a fast food place, they're like, you know, welcome to so-and-so, you know, I'm sales associate so-and-so. May I take your order? Ha, ha, ha. You know, would you like our credit card?
Or, you know what, I went to a place not too long ago and they said, oh, I really appreciate you when we were leaving. And I was like, you don't know me. You don't really appreciate me. But it was really weird because it stood out. It wasn't like I really appreciate it, like meaning your tip or your visit into the store. But they said you. And I think that was sort of the establishment's effort to connect with the person. But it just came across as so...
kind of saccharine.
No, I don't know, it's saccharine, but it just wasn't genuine, and you can't, there's no substitute for being genuine.
I'm genuinely hungry right now.
Are we done then?
No. We have a list. And we could talk about our first year of beekeeping in Brooklyn.
Which
actually ended on a sad note, but the hive crashed.
That means it died.
The queen died. and I didn't catch it in time. It's very hard in the fall. If the queen dies, it's very hard to resurrect the hive. You can combine it with another hive.
We didn't have another
hive to combine it with. We only had one hive on that roof. But
when you found them, they were weak, or they were all dead?
They were dead.
Oh, so there was no saving them.
No, we did harvest the honey, the remaining honey that was in there. It's pretty tasty.
We got the goods.
Yeah. But the taste of the honey is just so different than the honey up in Connecticut here.
As it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just the floralness, it just has a dimensionality to it. Is that a word? It just has a, it's like cheap wine versus some better wines I've had. There is just some multiple flavors to it.
Not that our Connecticut honey is cheap honey.
No, but it's like a field honey. And the Brooklyn honey, it's right next to Greenwood Cemetery, which is a 500-acre botanic garden with dead people in it.
Famous dead people.
Yeah.
Name a few.
The guy who wrote Basquiat. West Side Story. Basquiat. Jean-Michel Basquiat. Leonard Bernstein is there.
There's probably hundreds of famous people there. Charlie King.
Yeah. Yeah, our neighbor is buried there. And his wife, Betsy. So... But anyway, so it was, and my friend was a little, he wanted bees on the roof, but he was worried what his old school neighbors would say about it. So we kind of did it.
Discreetly?
Discreetly. And I was like, you know, it doesn't matter what the neighbors think because it's legal in New York. And there's a certain amount of, I don't know what the word is, bluster, but people on a block have power because you give it to them. You know, you can respect people, but still be doing what you want to do. You know, it's your property. And but the bee is actually ended
up... I'm going to remember that, sweet husband.
but it ended up that as Brian let people know about the bees, it was overwhelmingly positive to the point that one of the neighbors wants bees on their roof now.
Well, you have to take the fear factor out. And, you know, people's knee-jerk reaction to bees is that they sting and they're going to come attack you and they're going to be killer bees and you're going to be swollen and go to the hospital. And
right.
That's so rare. I mean, it's so rare. They mind their own business for the most part, and no one's going to climb up on the roof and harass them, I don't think. So
they were on the roof all year, and we would be in Brian's backyard where we did the lasagna gardening video. That's Brian's backyard. And the rain barrel video.
I don't think I've seen that one. The lasagna gardening video?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
It's how you lay in layers of compost and cardboard to make a raised bed, and then you plant in it. And the materials underneath degrade and feed the plant roots. So it's you layer a bed like you layer lasagna.
I see.
You put the sauce, the cheese, the noodles, sauce, cheese, noodles, you know, you cracker
know,
crumbs.
You know I wouldn't understand that.
No.
Because I don't cook, like, at all.
Right.
What are you talking about?
But suffice to say, if you're thinking about bees and worried about your neighbors, one way to do it is
sneak
to just not tell them. But then they're like, oh, I don't want any bees. I'm like, they've been here for a year. Have they attacked you?
Yeah.
And we would be in Brian's backyard, and the bees were near the back of the roof, and I could not see them coming off the roof.
From the street.
From the street or from the backyard.
Yeah.
And when you're on the roof, you'd see they'd fly out about 5-10 feet and they'd do a corkscrew up and then they'd take off for either the cemetery or, interestingly enough, to the harbor.
To the Statue of Liberty. Off they go.
Yeah. Pretty neat. So we did a video, which I will edit, about the crash of the hive. So.
That was disappointing.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we'll put some new bees up there next spring and we'll make a video about that as well.
I'm guessing most of your listeners, though, they don't have the opportunity to put a hive in their roof. They probably more have to put a hive in their yard or in their field. So hiding it from neighbors is a little more challenging.
You know, actually, you can put a fence around a hive. And as long as you allow about 6 feet in front of the hive, you can actually put a 6-foot fence around it so people don't see it.
You think it's your giant compost pile?
And they think it's, you know, it's where your tractor
your
is or
shower.
Something. Your outdoor shower. Yeah, just tell them it's your outdoor shower. Because the bees will fly, if there's a barrier right in front of them, they'll fly up and out very quickly, actually.
Okay.
So there you go.
Good to know.
So next on our list is dealing with Eric's back. And back in May, I was helping a friend move some cinder blocks, and I twisted the wrong way and realized, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. And then it started to hurt. So So I have a history of back pain to the point where I had spinal surgery a couple years back. And that causes its own problems with scar tissue, sometimes grabbing onto the same nerve that the disc rupture grabbed onto. And suffice to say that the camera operator had to take over a lot of tasks like walking the dogs a lot and stuff like that. And I went through a number of treatments to try and figure out what worked and what didn't. And now, 9 months later, I am walking a lot better.
You are.
I still use a cane part of the time, but I can... but let me just kind of walk you through it.
No pun intended.
I didn't want to go to the spine doctor because I knew what he would want to do, which is to try physical therapy and then operate again.
And you did try physical therapy.
Right. But the thing with physical therapy is your doctor will write your prescription and probably refer you to a certain physical therapist office. But you can, depending on your insurance, you can actually go to a different place if you have done some research or a referral. Someone else is like, oh, I had a really good physical therapist at this place. You can call your doctor and ask them to rewrite the prescription to another physical therapist. And I went to a nearby hospital, had a adjunct physical therapy office. And the first person I worked with was knowledgeable, but it didn't click very well personality-wise. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. And then that person wasn't available one day, and I worked with a woman who's actually from Russia. And I kind of, the Russians have a very, they have a kind of certain mindset, which is...
generally speaking.
To, what, you're going to do this thing and you will be fine, you know? So she was really great and I hit it off with her really well. So I went at the front desk when I was making more appointments. I said, could I work with this person going forward? And they said, sure.
She expected you to get better.
Right.
And
she
therefore
said,
you did.
You are getting better, and here are the exercises. And the other key thing is that they're going to show these exercises is to ask them for a diagram of the exercises.
Right.
Because sometimes they don't, they're just like, okay, do those at home. And I'm like, wait, I need pictures.
And he does.
And if you don't do the exercises, you're not going to get better.
Yeah, and you know, so many people don't do their exercises.
Right.
I don't know why.
So the physical therapy, you know, the insurance company will pay for only so many visits, and they want constant evaluations from the physical therapy office.
They don't want to waste their money or yours.
And at a certain point, they're like, okay, well, we're not going to authorize any more visits. But what I did, I kept doing the exercises anyway. And I went and saw a massage therapist.
You mean after you were done with their physical therapy?
Right.
Okay.
I went and saw a massage therapist who I've seen before and is excellent. She's actually a Pilates yoga instructor and does massage therapy. And there's a lot of massage therapists out there, and some of them are kind of touchy-feely and channeling your energy, and that didn't work for me. But she recommended that I also see an acupuncturist. No, she didn't recommend. I wanted to try it
because I was in a lot of... So many people love that.
And I was in a lot of pain.
Yeah. And you were tired of feeling bad at that point.
And so I went to an acupuncturist that the massage therapist recommended. And it was interesting, but it didn't work for me. And I think it was more the person, again, the personality of the acupuncturist in me didn't click very well. And you're letting them stick needles in you. I mean, they're just pinpricks. They're barely in you. But
you are not somebody who likes needles.
But I was okay with that. I found it very interesting.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, do you feel better? I'm like, no. And it's like, well, what about this? And all of a sudden they'd be like, whoa, because they just spin the needles.
And then it would feel, did you feel it in other places or just in your back?
It would like run up your arm or your leg, this energy points. And they really are there. They really are pressure points.
I've never had acupuncture, but I totally believe it because sometimes, you know, you hit a nerve in one part of your body and you feel it in a different part. Yeah. So you even if you haven't been through it, you get it.
So my whole point here is that if one thing doesn't work for you with an issue you're having, is to try another.
And to make sure that the person who's administering the whatever it is, the service, the procedure, the whatever it is somebody that you click with.
Yeah, that's really important. So actually, I need to send the physical therapist a Christmas card. So I just thought about that. She was great. She was really great. And
it's a Happy New Year card at this point.
it ended up that she was into Pilates as well, which I think is I don't know. You just have to find the right person, because it's like any job. Some people are just there and they're like, okay, do that. And then because they manage several people at once. Physical therapy is kind of a factory, because they have to make money every day.
Right.
So you're in a Pacific area or on a exercise table, and they're like, okay, do this. And then they walk away and they tend to another person. They come back and they check on you. So you have to be comfortable there. So you can always say, I'd like to try somewhere else. And actually, I found different reviews on Yelp, of all places, for different physical therapy offices and specific people to ask for in the office.
That detailed.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. So I don't know, people do these year-end wrap-ups, and I thought it was interesting. I went back and looked at some of the shows we did.
Oh, I thought we weren't going to do that. We are going to do that.
Yeah, why not? Is that okay?
Sure. Sure.
About some of the more popular videos. I'm basing this all on YouTube. I didn't look at the analytics at the website.
YouTube's got it.
Yeah.
They got it.
What do you think the most popular show on YouTube was that we did?
That we did?
Yeah. The Garden Fork did.
Was it related to bacon?
Yes.
That bacon source, the number one every time. Were the dogs in it?
Bacon wrapped grilled cheese. Yeah.
All right.
And that was just so kind of a spontaneous. I saw that BuzzFeed had made a bacon wrapped grilled cheese sandwich video, and it wasn't very good, I didn't think.
Ooh, can you say
and
that?
And I'm like, I could do that better. Because I wanted to show people actually how to make it. They kind of showed a bacon wrapped grilled cheese sandwich, but they didn't really show the tips to making it.
To improve upon it.
I wanted to empower people to...
Empower people with...
Raise their cholesterol.
They can do that on their own just fine.
Oh, you know, we didn't talk about with the back pain thing is what's also key is losing weight.
Oh, yeah. Well, these obvious things.
Yeah. Because the physical therapist... I actually gained weight because I had stopped moving around, but I ate the same amount of food.
I was walking the dogs.
Yeah. And so I gained 15 to 20 pounds, and she said, if you lose that weight, this will be a heck of a lot easier. And so it has caused me to lose that weight. So if you have something above your belt, if you lose it, you'll get better much quicker. But anyway, so the bacon wrap grilled cheese, it was interesting, some of the comments, people are like...
That's not a good segue into bacon wrap grilled cheese, by
like,
the way.
Oh, Garden Fork's not about... But they're like, you can't eat that every day. I'm like, I didn't say you could eat it every day. It's just like, it's just kind of a decadent thing. My sister made it she had her friends over for a wine and cheese kind of party, you know, her kind of party.
And bacon.
And so they made the bacon wrap grilled cheese sandwich as something to do at the party.
Oh, it's like the activity.
Yeah, and then you cut it up into little quarters because you can't eat the whole thing.
How old's your sister?
She's a little younger than me. So she's an adult, though.
Oh, that's what I wanted to know.
And along those lines, our deep fried turkey episodes were popular as well.
Don't eat that every day either.
No. But the thing was, what I was trying to do there was kind of be more seasonal.
What season did you do that episode?
Just before Thanksgiving.
You did?
Yeah.
Good job.
I missed the Christmas, though.
Sorry, I sound surprised.
Our palette Christmas tree video came out just before Christmas, when it would have been better from an eyeball standpoint to come out a couple weeks before Christmas.
I think it actually landed on Christmas Day. So if people were sitting around trying to find something to do on Christmas Day, there it was. I actually really liked that one. I thought the dogs were super cute, but that's because that's what I think makes a good episode.
Because they're your pups. And what do you have any particular favorites yourself? Or
I like the palette one, but you know, like I said, I'm just a little partial to dogs. Or I also tend to like any that have the beach scenes in them, because I love it when the dogs go to the beach. They're so happy.
We just went to the beach
On Christmas Eve. So unseasonably, fabulously warm. We went on Christmas Eve morning. And there were other people there.
A couple people.
We were surprised. Yeah, not many. There were other dogs there.
Yeah.
Hello, Ridgebacks.
Yeah, we're not the only ones. Well, all right. That's what I have on my list here. Do you have any more on your list?
No.
Okay. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. If you have any comments or thoughts, the email address is radio@gardenfork.tv. That's radio@gardenfork.tv. And maybe you could write a review on our iTunes page for this podcast. That always helps us too. All right?
All right. Maybe I could do some more camera operating this year.
Yeah. Well, when we make our suet ring, our bird feeder suet ring, you will be running the camera.
That's seed cake to you.
Yeah. All right, everyone. So make it a great day, and we'll see you later.
Bye.